Look at this place. This is where the eyes of the world are. This is where the news is being made. This, by the way, that you're looking at right here is a 600-year-old palace that goes all the way back to the Ming Dynasty. And we are here because we're going to be bringing you all the developments. And man, are they important. Man, are they important. We're going to be sharing them with you right here. This is the Sanchez Effect. What do you say we do this? Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. And what a day, what a moment, what a summit. You know, we call this the Sanchez Effect, but today we're going to be talking about the Navarro Effect, as in Peter Navarro and his comments, which have sent shockwaves through India. Just in case you missed some of the comments from Mr. Navarro, let us give you a sampling.
Modi's a great leader. I don't understand why he's getting to bed with Putin and Xi Jinping when he's the biggest democracy in the world. So I would just simply say to the Indian people, please understand what's going on here. You got Brahmins profiteering at the expense of the Indian people. We need that to stop.
Oh, wow. Ouch. Did you hear those words? Let me tell you something. That's not going over well, right? I mean, look, maybe I should put it this way. If you're looking for ways to make the ties between the countries that are here and India even closer, then he's done that. Mr. Navarro has done that with comments like that. If he was looking for a way to give the people of India a common enemy, for example, to make them more unified and to support their Prime Minister Modi even more, by golly, he's done that as well. Congratulations, Mr. Navarro. You have been very successful in that. In fact, you know, I was saying a moment ago about how a lot of people in India are very angry about this. You know what we did? We took a selection, a sampling, if you will, of the different comments, and some of them we couldn't even put on the air. They're so angry. But here's a sampling of some of the things you're saying right now in India about Mr. Navarro.
All of Trump's trumpeters, have they run out of reasonable and rational things to say? Peter Navarro, who has now become his chief spokesman for attacking India, if he writes his own script, maybe a little jump in IQ would help.
Well, I am a bit surprised that Navarro is saying all kinds of extremely nasty things. The United States has sanctioned us for decades, and now it's sanctioning us again. For what? For buying oil and defense equipment from Russia. What is the signal that they're sending us? That we can't rely?
America should not make baseless statements like this.
Brahmins are profiteering by buying Russian oil. Peter Navarro's meltdown reaching peak levels of senile.
Look, there is no question that Mr. Navarro's comment is unkind. It's unsettling. And here's the understatement of the century. It's certainly not very diplomatic. But you know what else it is? You know what else it is? It's wrong and it's stupid. And let me tell you why. Let's take Mr. Navarro at his word and consider his perspective that India should not buy oil from Russia because it hurts Ukraine. But then why would you single out India? Why not go after Germany or France or the rest of Europe? They're still buying oil from Russia. Sure, it's going through India, but they're still buying Russian oil. And how can you ask those countries to sanction India when they're actually getting their oil and gas from India as well that comes from Russia? But wait, if you think for 1 minute that that's very hypocritical, then get ready for this. You know who else is helping Russia by buying Russia's oil, even though they're getting it after it's refined through India? This is going to blow your mind. It blew my mind when I started reading this. Are you ready? Take a look at this headline. Take a look at this headline. There it is. The headline that makes everything that Peter Navarro says seem incredibly stupid. Does he know this? Let me read you what's in this article, and hopefully maybe you'll pass this along to Mr. Navarro. Quote, according to the Ukrainian oil market analysts, India supplied 15.5% of Ukraine's total diesel imports in July 2025. That's more than they get from any other country. Ukraine is getting its oil from Russia to fight a war with Russia. What? They average 2,700 tons of it. It makes July, interestingly enough, one of India's strongest export months this year to Ukraine. How rich is this? I mean, what, is Mr. Navarro now going to sanction Ukraine for getting Russian oil as well? Why not? It's crazy as everything else. See, look, from economic terms, let me explain this to you. What Mr. Navarro is doing is called protectionism. It's called protectionism. See, my country, where I'm from, the United States, used to be the country that advocated free market principles. Everybody should buy from everybody. But suddenly, under the Trump administration, it stopped promoting free market principles. And look what it's pushing for. It wants the world to stop buying oil from Russia, which happens to be potentially the biggest supplier of oil in the entire world. Just use what you learned in high school. Remember when you were in high school? Basic economics, basic math. What happens if you cut off the supply of any product from the biggest supplier? What is going to happen to the price? It's going to go up. It's going to go way up. Certainly in the case of oil and gas, it's going to go way up. And my sources in the energy sector have told me there's not enough oil and gas in the world. Russia's reserves are needed to meet the demand. So if Mr. Navarro gets his way, stay with me here. Let's suppose he gets his way. You know what would happen? A global recession. You know what happened? What would happen in the United States to Mr. Navarro, Mr. Trump's voters? The average American would see gas prices double or triple overnight. However, there's some people who are going to do well. Mr. Powell's Navarro's at Exxon and Chevron and BP and, oh, yeah, they're going to be laughing and smiling all the way to the bank, but not the little guy. So, yeah, you know, we call this show the Sanchez effect today. We're kind of calling it the Navarro effect, and we're not done. Because you know what else Peter Navarro is doing? He's actually making the case for the countries that are here in China who are literally turning their backs on the West. Because as Mr. Navarro has proven, the West has turned their backs on them. So they're saying, okay, two can play this game, right? So what would happen if suddenly we start to see the disintegration of this hegemony? What if suddenly, for example, we start seeing NATO countries decide to come over to this summit, right? Well, guess what? It's happening. Guess who's here at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit? And he's expressing a desire for full membership in the summit. Turkey. Turkey is a NATO country. And it's now here rubbing elbows with Mr. Navarro's proclaimed enemies. In fact, here's Mr. Erdogan, Turkey's president. And, you know, if you tell me, but listen to what he says. I think you're going to come away with the impression that this guy's not turning back. He's going to join these guys eventually. Take a listen.
Global problems can only be resolved by enhancing our efforts based on cooperation and effective multilateralism. In our view, the key to achieving this lies within the multilateral system, with the United Nations at its core. However, it appears that the United Nations requires significant reform to fulfill its responsibilities effectively. I look forward to strengthening our cooperation with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which exemplifies the tradition of finding joint solutions to problems.
By the way, I mean, I should probably add to that while I'm sitting here thinking about it, that you guys just saw him a little while ago, but you saw Fico, right? So Fico of Slovakia looks like he's kind of, what do you call that? Dipping his toes, you know, in the water as well, thinking about maybe coming over to the other side. Interestingly enough, that would be a second EU country, a second NATO country that's saying, you know what? Maybe I don't want to be a part of NATO. Maybe I want to be with these guys. They got more resources. They've got a lot of other things that the NATO countries these days don't seem to have. That's a big development. We're going to talk about that. Another big development that's taking place that we've just learned about within the last, 10 hours or so. A lot of stuff is happening here fast. The other thing that's happening that I think is fascinating is, you know, Russia has pipelines that go into Germany and Europe and all these other places, including the one that's been in the news lately that goes out of Russia and it goes through to all the way to Slovakia and through Hungary and all the way to Croatia. Well, There's a new pipeline that's just been announced. It's a cooperative pipeline that's been developed between China and Russia. I'm going to tell you about that as well. Stay right there, because when we come back, I'm going to be joined by one of the best guests we could have here to talk about this. Yang Yiwei, director of the School of International Studies at China's Renmin University, is going to be joining me right here in the studio. And he's a diplomat. He knows NATO. He knows China relations. He knows Asia relations. He understands the United States. And he's going to be right here in just a moment talking to us and taking you through this. Stay with us, because we're bringing you a piece of history right here from China. Welcome back. We are here in China. The Sanchez Effect is bringing you what is a transformational moment in history. And we are here to try and tell it, analyze it, and record it for you. And to help me do this, I am joined by Wang Yiwei. He is the director of the School of International Studies at Renmin University here in China. He is also a diplomat with experience with working with NATO, working with the United States, working with many countries around the world. And of course, he knows his homeland as well as anybody and understands all the effects, if you will, of the things that are happening. I am so happy to have you here with me joining us.
Thank you for the invitation. We'll be pleased, you know, honored to be here.
Well, no, the honor's ours. And to think that, you know, I keep saying this and I've been kind of pinching myself. Actually, you know, I started saying this to my viewers 2 weeks ago or so, when India said to the United States, we're not going to do what you say anymore. We're going to do what we want to do. I thought in that moment, Professor, to myself, and I shared it with my viewers, I said, you know, that is a moment historians are going to go look back on and say, that's when the world changed. Do you agree?
Of course, India always to be independent. You know, they are the leader in the non-alliance movement and also the leader, one of the leaders in the Global South.
Yeah.
With Narello, you mentioned about India's the biggest democracy. I doubt, you know, the Indians prefer the number one identity is global leader or in the Global South. It's not the biggest democracy. Yeah. The democracy is in your own definition about it. It's separate the world, non-democracy, democracy, dictator. So this is very naive to identify India, okay. Okay, what India need most? It's not democracy. There are two democracies, you know, three Indians that have four voices, you know.
Right.
They need unified to carry out the push forward the industrialization. If the industrialization, they are competitive with United States. United States also wanted the more jobs back and then industrial reindustrialization. And India, so definitely is, the U.S. said, we are pity to make China to join WTO, you know, China to be the gen of the industrial power. We cannot repeat that strategy anymore to put India, which is more populous now than China.
But it seems, Professor, that what I'm hearing China say to India and what I'm hearing India say to China in regard to that is, thank you very much, yes, we'll take the offer, is that China is saying to India, look, don't worry about the United States and these castigations that they're putting on you. We'll work together. We'll take care of it. What they don't buy, we'll buy. The resources you need, we'll share. We'll trade with you. We'll do everything. You're not going to miss a beat, Mr. India. We're going to be here for you, holding your hand. That's what I'm hearing. Is that right?
Yeah, you are originally from Cuba. You know, there's a saying that you are too far away from the God and too close to the United States, right?
Right.
So India definitely is Chinese neighbor.
So you looked at me up on what, Googles or something? How did you know?
You know, India definitely, they need industrialization, need a good relation with China. In the past decade, India's manufacturing output declining.
Yeah.
So the dream is not just to be the outsourcing of the software, you know, just, you know, do this. You need the real economy, that's industrialization.
So what really is going on here right now, right, is cooperation. I'll give you an example of that. There's something that just happened today, as a matter of fact. We can share this with our viewer. I made some notes on this. You know how Russia's always tried to sell its oil and its gas, and it's always looked toward the West, right? It looks like with this announcement today, what Russia's doing and what many of these countries that are here are doing is they're looking and discovering that the best markets are not the ones that are far away, it's the ones that are next door. Russia has just announced a new pipeline deal in what is essentially a MOU, a memorandum of understanding, as they say in business, mm-hmm. where Russia and China are agreeing to boost, there it is right there, the mm-hmm. same pipelines from Siberia that they've had in the past, but now they're going to increase them more, they're going to have more cooperation, and they're going to make sure that Russia's oil, which it has plenty of, continues to flow into China for decades and decades to come. That's amazing.
Well, that, excuse me, that's of course is a natural choice. China and Russia are the biggest neighborhood, and then because of their way to the West, mm-hmm. you're blocked because of Ukraine. Now they will look to the East. And China is a dynamic of the economy, industrial, world center. They, of course, need more oil from Russia.
So this is really what's happening. I mean, what we're seeing happen here, this is why we keep saying history is being made. It's deals like this. That's just one example. There's many deals. There's 20 countries here. They're all doing deals. But essentially what they're saying is we can unite and do these trade deals, et cetera, amongst ourselves. And we don't need to look to the West anymore. We can not just survive, but profit from each other.
Definitely. Russia have the reach of the resources, oil, gas, and everything, right? And China is the big market, one of the biggest markets.
Biggest in the world.
So now we need each other. So why we should trade with U.S. dollars, right? So why not bypass over that? When Russia was a kickoff of the SWIFT system after Ukraine, so that's still...
Yeah, see, but I'm so glad you said that, Professor, because that leads us to the next point, and this is where the rubber really meets the road with this thing. Think about it. If these countries, China, Russia, Brazil, South Africa, Egypt, UAE, Iran, I can name the rest of them, mm-hmm. you probably could by heart. If these countries now all decide that they're going to do something even more important, and that is create their own trade system, their own banking system, their own monetary system.
Including European Union, actually. Because of the Iran, it was sanctioned by the United States. So European Union, the innovator of the bypass of the U.S. dollars of the paying system to deal with Iran. So
what happens if they do that? What happens if they're successful creating a currency, for example?
And then U.S. sanction to everybody? No, I don't think they can sanction to everybody because they need also business with that. So everybody, they're hating that the U.S. dollar is not credit, it's not trusted. So that reason, they enforce them to do their own one.
You know what you're saying? You know what I'm thinking that you're saying? You're saying if these guys get big enough, they're going to be too big to fail. Right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
The comment that we always hear about.
Including the trade war, 90% of the transfer to the American consumers and the importers. So, inflation and others have suffered a lot.
I mentioned a little while ago to you, and we were talking about, I think you mentioned in my intro, I was talking about Turkey, and that Turkey is seemingly saying, I mean, if you hear Erdogan, he's saying, I want to be a member. I want a member of the SCO, which is crazy. Well, because he's in NATO, and, the people in the West are going to say, don't
Turkey
do that.
The neighborhoods of the joint SCO and not the Turkey, right? So.
But imagine, Professor, if we start seeing NATO countries and EU countries say, I don't want to be a part of that dead organization anymore. I want to go over here and join these guys. They've got more money. I want to go be with the rich uncle. But wait, I got a better example for you. You want to see this? Here's Fico.
Okay.
Fico of Slovakia.
Yeah,
he's saying the same thing. Gene, play that if you could for the professor.
A new world order is being created. New rules for a multicultural world. A new balance of power, which is extremely important for international stability. Being part of such discussions means encouraging dialogue and not playing the role of an offended little child. This is somehow how the EU and its leaders behave today. The EU is just like the frog at the bottom of the well who thinks that the sky it sees from there is the entire sky. And we are happy with ourselves, which is extremely embarrassing.
The EU is playing the role of an offended little child. Did you hear that?
And also, it's a Chinese saying, Jin Di Zhuwa. It's from the sinister guy from the well. It's like that.
Right.
So he borrows the Chinese expression.
Does it surprise you to hear him say that?
I work in Brussels. Yeah. You see the map, the world map of Europe. They put Europe in the center. So I think, Europe is still big. But you see the Chinese map or any other world map, Europe is just the perfect peninsula of the Eurasia. I said, it's small. So that's the reason I think the officials tell the truth.
I don't know how many Europes you can put into Russia, but it's probably a lot. Have you seen them?
And you mentioned about Turkey. Turkey and Russia cheated by the West.
Hmm.
No, Russia cheated because of NATO, no any right. interest with expansion.
Right.
And Turkey said, Turkey, we applied to join the European Union for decades, but never accepted it.
So what happens to those countries? What how do you see this playing out? I mean, you and I are, we study this. I, because I'm paid to do it. I'm a journalist. You, because you're a diplomat and a student of international relations. But the average Westerner, my neighbors in the United States, they don't even know this is happening. I asked my wife this morning. I was talking to my wife. She's in Miami. I said, honey, do you know anything about what's going on with this SCO? Do you see it in the news? Are they talking about it on CNN? She goes, nope, nobody here knows anything about it. Is that weird?
Americans, you know, the oil politics is local. The Americans think about the U.S. is unique in the world. The world is here. So there's no need then to travel abroad.
But is it America or is it the American media and the American politicians who are forcing that thought process on the people? See, so, that's the question. Americans, you know, would want to know.
The ordinary American people, even for the congressmen, you know, 70% more than, they don't have a passport. The only travel is to Mexico and Canada with the driver's license, is not even a passport. So how do you know about the whole world? Even think about George W. Bush. He said, oh, Africa, oh, one country, come on. So even 80% of the Americans, the fighter, you know, in the Vietnam War, they cannot identify. Well, it's Vietnam in the world map, they cannot identify.
Africa.
Taiwan, they don't have any ideas about that.
Yeah. Africa is a wonderful country. Wow.
You know, the Memorial Hall of the Korean War, you know, Washington, D.C., say, you know, for those, you know, the hundreds of the thousands of the Americans, you know, heroes, they lost their life in the planet. We never heard about this name.
Yeah.
You see, what did they say?
So, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking that as I look at this, there will probably end up being some very important declarations that will come out of this. Things that will probably affect the course of the globe for the next 40 or 50 years, I think. What are you looking at that can be those transformational declarations or agreements that will likely come out of here?
Well, I suggest maybe with the human rights, I think the majority, 85%, they live in the global south. So I will borrow the concept of the President Putin when he was interviewed by Xinhua News Agency on this trip to China. He said, not global south, it's global majority, right? I like these words, you know, we need carry out the so-called principles of the human rights. The people matter. Mm. You know, people live in the global south. Why the voice is only from the capital, not the people's voice, not from the minority?
You know what you're getting at? You're getting at something that I talk about a lot on my show, and I'm always sharing this with my producers and my writers and my viewers and everybody, and they hear me say this. They're sick of me saying this, probably, but the value of a country and the value of a leader of a country is how much he does for the people of his country.
Yeah.
Not for other countries, not for other economies. No. Take care of your own first, and then the rest will take care of itself. And when I look at, and the reason I'm telling you this is not because I'm telling you something you don't know. You obviously know this very well. But when I look at the polls, for example, the favorability polls in places like Europe, they can't stand their leaders there, and they don't think they're doing anything good for them. The people of France are only giving Macron 23% approval. The people of, pardon me, that's Starmer gets 23%, mm-hmm. Macron gets 29%, mm-hmm. Merz gets 35%. I mean, not for nothing, but your guy here, Mr. Xi, he's doing something like 79 or 82%. And those are Western polls that are finding out that the people, some people don't like them, some people like them, whatever. Everybody's allowed to like it now. I like chocolate, you like vanilla. But generally speaking, people in many of these countries that are represented here are generally liked by their people, or at least they're okay with them in general, with their governments, more so than in the West right now.
Not just trust our leaders, but also trust the government. So this is a privilege for the Chinese, the digitalization, because like data, when the Europeans, you know, too much focus on the privacy, they don't trust the government. Americans don't trust the government. They trust the God. The Chinese, we think about the people is the God. So we trust the government because the government should be served for the people. So it's our mentality. So it's the Communist Party of China. Actually, it's not for part. It's for the whole Chinese people, the whole Chinese nation. So from the thing of long-term thinking.
Is it, though? I mean, let me ask you the question that, my friends, I was talking to one of my accountants before when I was thinking about coming to this part of the world to practice journalism. And he said to me, and this is a very educated man, a good man, a smart man. He's a good friend, dear friend of mine. And he says, are you sure you want to go there? You know, those places, Russia and China, those people are communists. Well, okay. but God bless him. He doesn't know. I mean, this is the... So I ask you, what would you say to someone like my friend and my accountant who's afraid for me because I'm here in this communist place?
Firstly, this is they don't understand the Karl Marxism. Karl Marx said very clearly, communism can only achieve together with all the nations in the world. No, any single country can identify as a communist
so
country.
So there's no such thing as communism?
No. Yeah. Socialists, maybe. Many socialists in the world, in Africa, in
oh, yeah.
The U.S. also.
The U.S. is socialist. Are you kidding? Of course. They tax 40% of your taxes.
Yes.
They better be socialist.
Why not? Socialists prefer the social justice.
Yeah.
We hate it with the gap between rich and poor. Why is not a good...
I mean, if you go by the definition of the government taking care of its people, anytime the government pays the firefighters to put out fires, anytime the government pays the police officers to protect me, they're socialists, because it's the government taking care of a service that, if you looked at it from a different perspective, I would be able to do for myself.
Most importantly, tomorrow we have the big military parade. Yeah. You know, in Nan, the army, Chinese, is the people's liberation army. It's people, okay? So majority, actually, that works over this army is not a fight, because it never fight in the past decade, four decades. It's help the people. You know, you save the people, you know, during the flood this summer, you know, so many climate change. So the army is doing that job. It's not fighting.
I am so glad that you went there, because I got to ask you this question. Mm-hmm. Why in the hell, if tomorrow your country is celebrating the defeat of Japan, which at the time was a horrible, autocratic, abusive, rapist nation, mm-hmm. based on what they did here not too far away in Shanghai, as mm-hmm. you know, why aren't the Brits going to be here celebrating that defeat? Why isn't America going to be here? You're celebrating the end of World War II. You're on their side. Why aren't they here holding your hand and celebrating with you? I don't understand that. Do you? Explain it to me.
Okay. Many people say, you guys only invite us to global East, like Iran, North Korea, and Russia leaders, not the Western democratic big countries' leaders. No. We invite everybody. Right. They're not there to come.
Really? You did invite him?
Well, definitely. We invited President Trump. We like to President Trump. He personally would like to accept this, you know, invitation letter, but say, warm, sir.
So why not? Why do you think he doesn't come?
If you come, you see, jointly with President Putin. It's for politically incorrect. Come on, this is everything is slow. Okay, we should trace back the truth. This is World War II. We are the allies. We jointly defeated the Nazism. So why not, politicize the Ukraine or any other issue? It's just stupid. Okay, in this regard, FISO, I think China think about he's the hero, huh?
Yeah.
Because the European Union leaders, the NATO leaders are warming, and no any current leaders attended this military parade.
Right.
So he's the only European Union current leader to attend. Of course, the Vučić, Serbia, the president, also will come, but he's not a member of the European Union.
What do you think of FISO and the language that he's using? I mean, he used some really harsh language there. His story about the frog at the bottom of the well looking up and seeing only a little piece of the sky and thinking he owns and sees the entire sky. That's a very fascinating way of telling what he thinks, how the West sees the world, no?
Look, the World War II started by Nazi Germany invading Poland. But before, Nazi Germany, took, Sudeten, the area from the Czech Republic, right?
Yeah.
And then the UK Prime Minister and the other French... make the appeasement policy to Hitler, and then just make the encourage to invade more. So FISO come, I think, told this is very important. Now, if we want to please, make appeasement to President Trump, and then for the trade war, and then they will have a more brave to have a more trade war to others. So I think we should avoid from this happening again.
Do you think? I'm wondering as I'm sitting here listening to you. I'm thinking, will other nations be joining FISO and Orban and others like that?
They definitely want to attend. Actually.
Are they afraid to say it?
No.
Well, because if you say it, you get in trouble.
Because they will be punished by some Western
tariffs.
Leaders.
Yeah.
Including, the ambassador. I just had the lunch with the deputy ambassador of the UK embassy here.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Because the ambassador of the UK also warned not to join. Because the U.S. ambassador cannot join.
Did he tell you he wants to be here? He would like to come?
You know...
But he can't?
You know, now it's the movie. on the Lisbon one, the Chinese, farmers in Zhejiang saved many lives, lives of the Britain, because of the shipping from Hong Kong, killed by the Japanese.
Right, right.
So many love stories, including Zhejiang also. The Chinese farmers saved the pilots and then be resurrected by the Japanese.
Pardon me for being a journalist, but I'm going to try and make some news here. I promise I won't tell anybody. Were you really told today by a diplomat from the UK that he personally would love to be at the celebration, but he doesn't feel like he can?
I cannot openly say that. But from her eyes, and I can guess.
Okay.
Because UK is seeking to improve the relations with China.
I think I know what you're saying without saying it, and I think you've said enough. But see, that's bothersome, because what is the most important thing for you and for me and for everybody in this world as a human being? Free will. Free will.
For
you should have
who?
A right to think and choose and do what you wish. That's, the universal law of the universe, right? And if you can't do something, then you're not free.
If you see the history, the free world used to be identified socialist bloc.
Yeah.
Soviet Union, China, those. The West, they dare to use the free world. They say just a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Why they do not use the free? Because they are not really free. They are not free from capital. They are not free from, hegemonic power.
I'll give you an example of that. The other night I was trying to look this up. I didn't know what to expect. This is my first time in China. So I started walking around and looking at people and talking to people and talking to drivers and looking at what I was seeing. And I thought to myself, this doesn't look like what I thought it was going to look like, right? So I did a little Googling, mm-hmm. and I found that in the United States, the perception of freedom among Americans has gone down by like 25 points. 90-some% of Americans used to feel like they were free. They were free people. Today, it's down to like 70% or below. So then I checked the other one, and I said, let's look at China. In China, people today feel much more free by about 25%, coincidentally, than they did 20 years ago.
Okay.
What do you think of that?
This is a digital world. People get information from internet.
I pardon me for doing that.
Okay.
I looked at Mr. Google's to get my information.
but it's your so-called the free news. It's the platform give to you.
Yeah.
Actually, can you find many news on China, on Russia?
No, no. You have to come to our show, or you have to go to some shows on the internet, some good shows on the internet.
Okay.
Where
I was always be asked about that. Only two countries in today's world cannot use Google. One is North Korea, another is China, of course. Okay, why?
Why?
Because we asked, negotiated with Google.
Mm-hmm.
Google can access to Chinese market, no problem. But you should follow rule of law in China.
Mm.
And then Chinese constitution said, first sentence was the People's Republic of China. The People's Republic of China is a nation led by the Communist Party. In this regard, you should respect the leadership of the Communist Party.
Yeah.
And then Google cannot follow that. So against the rule of law, and then block. Not block, but cannot access. But still Chinese, cross the firework, you still use Google.
Yeah.
It's free. But you cannot, follow the rule of law of China.
Well, this brings us, I love this conversation. I'm really enjoying this conversation. You're such a smart man and you're such an intellectual, and I enjoy this, at least from my part. Maybe I'm a pseudo-intellectual, but I'm trying hard to stay up with you. I'm fascinated where this discussion has led us. What in the hell is the definition of a democracy, and what in the hell is the definition of communism? Because I don't know the difference. Sometimes I see a little bit of this one in that one and a little bit of that one in the other one. Do you get my drift?
Okay, easy going. Capitalist, follow the rule of capital. So taxpayer, you pay more tax, you have more ways.
Yeah.
You have more voters.
Mm-hmm.
So like the rule of law in the U.S. is the rule of lawyer. If you're rich, you can hire, the best lawyer to defend for you.
Yes.
There's a Simpson incident. Who played the Watson, and he was assigned to his wife.
Yeah.
But because he has the best, lawyer, so he was sent to for innocent. So everybody says this is unfair.
But doesn't the same thing happen here? If you have power, if you have power here, if you have, if you're a party member, don't you have more advantages than the average person?
No, impossible. Because we are the, we say people's republic.
Right.
It's not a capital republic. So that's the real, you know, we say freedom. So if you also, which in Washington, D.C., there is another memorial hall, it's the Vietnam War. So you say, freedom is not free. Okay, some people say, yes, we can free access to Google. But at the same time, you don't have a, you know, real freedom. Because everybody uses Google, you don't have the real, you know, sovereignty in the data.
No,
I know. So that's the reason, you know, China, we can have our own Baidu. It's Chinese Google.
The argument that you're making, or the best argument you can make for something like that, is what we would define as sovereignty. Each nation should have its own sovereignty. If tomorrow I am the nation of whatever, Goo-Goo-Boo, and you're the nation of Pa-Pa-Pa, and the nation of Goo-Goo-Goo decides that he's going to be a government run by communism or socialism or whatever ism he wants to choose, that's his business. Let it fail on its own merit without you coming in and saying you're not allowed to have that type of system. That's what I think we should do. That's now that now I'm taking you into libertarianism. Libertarianism says, do as you wish, but don't tell other people what to do, right? And Mr. Putin talks about that a lot.
Another saying is, do as I say, not do as I do.
Yeah,
my way or highway.
That's called hypocrisy.
So,
but isn't that what we're seeing from the West more these days?
You know, those countries that want to centralize their power, have a strong government to build the preconditions for market to work. It's like building the swimming pool to train the babies.
Yes.
And then the baby can swim in the sea. But if you just rely on the market and put the baby to swim in the sea, they will die. So, and then if you do that, build a swimming pool like China, the strong government, and then they portray you as the so-called the path to the, you know, serfdom.
I get it. I see where you're... Here's another one. Here's another one for you that I think, you know, speaking of like hypocrisy, for example... Another example is what the United States is doing right now with not only India, but also in the case of Ukraine. The United States is angry that Russia has taken its action in Ukraine. And I understand that. It has a right to either criticize it or call it out, as you will. But your country is in the midst of one of the most horrific actions in Gaza right now, and you're supporting it. Your country may have been responsible for the deaths. My country, by the way, when I say your country, I'm just making the argument. We may have been responsible for the deaths of 500 to 700,000 people in Iraq and in Afghanistan and in Libya and in Syria. So here's the other point that I think gives credence to some of the people that are in these meetings in the SCO who can look at the West and say, how can you criticize any of our military actions when your military actions have superseded ours?
Okay, maybe that's because the U.S., they are choosing people.
Yeah.
Okay. Everything, the God bless America, is in the U.S. dollar, they're written very clearly. So I own the world. So everything I launched, the war against...
So it's a just war.
I'm the civilization, you are the barbarism, so that's justice. So it's, we say it's not equal, definitely.
Where does it go, though? I mean, in the end, I think there's a possibility. I see it anyway. I think the EU and NATO have almost reached their limit of power. I think they're weakening. And I think if you look at them, again, from a GDP standpoint, it's massively unscaled compared to what's going on here. I mean, it's not even close. GDP growth, your country's at 5%. India's almost at 6.8%. Even Russia's at 3.8%. Nobody in Russia even comes close to those numbers. So who's growing and who's dying?
Most importantly, it's a structure. The Americans see GDP growing also rapidly because of the, you know, the stable coin, the currency, you know, the financial, you know, bubbles they sometimes make. The Chinese economy is a real economy. We are manufacturing output is nine nations combined together. So it's more than G7 combined together. Can you imagine?
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. I know.
And according to the UN, you know, predictions by 2030, I mean, 5 years later, China's output of the manufacturing will contribute to 45% of the whole world.
Those are amazing numbers. I had that conversation with Professor Wolf the other day, and it was awe-inspiring to hear him say just what those numbers for China at this point are. So here's the question then. You made me think of something else as I'm talking to you. If the U.S. is somehow successful in punishing China through tariffs, so that all these goods that China has always made, you know, the story is China's the factory of the world. If the factory is shut down because nobody's buying the products, then what's China going to do? because of these tariffs. Do you fear that could happen? Why are you smiling?
No, unfortunately, the U.S. is not on the world. Our trade with U.S. is declining. There used to be one-fourth, you know, maximum, but now 15%, 8%. Even cut zero trade with U.S., China still can survive.
Wow. Say that again? Zero. If your trade with the U.S. went to zero, if all the stuff that I buy Walmart, that my wife and my children buy at Walmart, is not there tomorrow, you guys would be fine.
Fine.
China would be fine.
Yes.
I don't mean you guys. I know you don't run the country.
But maybe suffer.
This country would be fine, right?
And then inflation, and then next year, the midterm election, President Trump will definitely more focus on the economic growth. So now the trade war with China now stand off, and then maybe finish.
So explain to me how that happens. Essentially, you're saying just like India is looking for a new market, Russia had to look for a new market when it got sanctioned and its assets were frozen. It just looked for a new market, and it found a bigger market, it says. I talked to Mr. Solyanov. He's the Minister of Finance of Russia, and he said, it may have been one of the best things that happened to us because it made us look for markets that we didn't know existed, and we've now created great relationships with those. You're saying if the United States were really going to be a stickler for these tariffs, with China, for example, China would literally have other markets to put it in. And then they're all here now visiting your country, right?
Yes, that's the reason President Trump changed the mind. Trade war cannot, you know, undermine China's economy. And then China, you know, even so-called the rise and the fall, actually China still rising. So the other allies, including European Union or Japan or South Korea, want to help U.S. to beat China, President Trump, no interest. Now the President Trump is thinking more on how to sacrifice the allies, like the military alliance system, to pay for the debts and then to set stand with the U.S.
Let me ask you a personal question. When you were in Brussels and you were meeting with all these colleagues of yours who work for the European Union and for other places in Europe, did you have conversations like this, freewheeling with them to try and make them understand some of the things that maybe they don't understand? And what was their reaction? Seriously, I mean...
Look... even today in Brussels, it's impossible to organize similar conference, both invite Chinese, Russians, and Europeans and Americans. Impossible.
Why? They don't want to come?
Because Russia was sanctioned by the West.
So Mr. Navarro said, if you're Russia's friend, you can't be our friend. So, and you choose what?
Okay. There's a saying that the reverse of the Kissinger's trilateral, you know, they want to make a normalize of the relation with Russia, even build the alliance with Russia and then to beat China. Impossible. Russia, you know, treat again and again by the West. I don't think they can trust the West.
So wait, yeah, exactly. That's interesting you said that, because the argument is in America is that we have brought, when I say we, the U.S.'s castigatory methods have caused China, Russia, and India to come together. You're saying, no, they would have come together anyway?
No, of course, the West enforced Russia, including now, you know, India, because of the 50% of the tariff
I see.
Trump,
yeah.
To more close to China. So, because China's big market. They need to have to think about the domestic politics, right? The economic growth.
So you're saying the Kissinger doctrine that we need to choose one and that way we can punish the other. Let's choose the Soviet Union or let's choose Russia and we'll be their friends and that way we'll have an advantage over China. That would not work right now,
even if
the United States changed its mind.
No. Okay. Firstly, during the 1970s, our common threat is from the Soviet Union, both China and the United States.
Correct.
Secondly, because of the Vietnam War, not 8 years, so we are now fighting bravely against Americans, you know, aggression.
Yeah.
Now Ukraine is not that way, and then the give up of the Bretton Woods system, the dollar and the gold, you know, depass, and that's the reason they normalize the relations with China, and then China help, you know, U.S. jointly to defeat the Soviet Union.
This is really an economic war that's being waged right now, and the battle lines are right here in China, as we see this summit take place. Do you fear, final question, because we're running out of time, do you fear that that economic war could become more aggressive and turn into something more of a military conflagration?
I don't think so, because the military parade to celebrate the 80 years of victory, it will show you no any possibility to launch similar open war because China's so rich, and then no any possibility.
We're too big, maybe too big to fail.
Yeah.
We come back to that.
Thank you.
What an honor.
Thank you.
You are such a smart man, and we are so lucky.
And because of you are smart.
No. I'm just asking the questions, and you've given us some wonderful insight into some things that maybe we in the West should have been looking at and trying to understand many years ago. Thanks again, Professor.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And that's our show. We're here live, as you can see, in the middle of what is going on right now, which is, without question, a historic moment in our world. Some of the decisions and some of the policies and some of the agreements and declarations that are going to be made here were probably things that are going to affect us for years, if not decades, to come, and maybe even more. These are the things historians will likely write about. We're lucky that we can be here to document it as it happens. It's an honor for us. This is the Sanchez Effect. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thank you for letting us come into your homes.